The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
Rainmaker FM.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. This is your host, Kelton Reed, here to take you on another tour of the habits, habitats, and brains of renowned writers. And this week, we have a double-stuffed episode with the editor-in-chief of Copyblogger, my colleague and friend Stephanie Flaxman, who stopped by to rap with me about her journey from solopreneur to headline honcho, the rules of ruthless editing, her philosophy of creativity, and much more. Steph's a professional writer and editor who manages the editorial team for copyblogger.com, where she helps publish one of the most influential and popular content marketing and writing blogs available for a large audience of online writers. Incidentally, Copyblogger is the reason The Writer Files exists and where the written series was started. A longtime contributor to the Copyblogger community, Steph officially joined the team in 2014 with a mission to help ensure stringent editorial standards and create content aimed at helping fellow entrepreneurs stand out from the competition. Ms. Flaxman's weekly podcast, Editor-in-Chief, which ran from 2015 to 2016, delivered her signature Art of Writing updated for marketing in the digital age. Before Copyblogger, Steph ran her own online writing and editing shop, Revision Fairy, which she started in 2008. She's also done stints as the West Coast office manager for Media Bistro and an editor for PR Newswire. In part one of this file, Steph and I discuss her early exposure to journalism and unique path to a career in writing and editing, how her discovery of Brian Clark's trailblazing blog helped her take her own business to the next level, why great things happen when you make yourself vulnerable, how Steph became a true triple threat in her field, why you should write every day, no matter how busy you are, and how to incorporate balance and philosophy into your content mindset.
The Writer Files is brought to you by the all-new Studio Press Sites, a turnkey solution that combines the ease of an all-in-one website builder with the flexible power of WordPress. It's perfect for authors, bloggers, podcasters, and affiliate marketers, as well as those selling physical products, digital downloads, and membership programs. If you're ready to take your WordPress site to the next level, see for yourself why over 200,000 website owners trust StudioPress. Go to rainmaker.fm/StudioPress now. That's rainmaker.fm/StudioPress. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click subscribe to automatically see new interviews as soon as they're published.
All right. We're back once again with an esteemed guest on The Writer Files today. I've got a very good friend of mine, Stephanie Flaxman, is here. How are you today, Steph?
I'm doing well, Kelton. Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here. I'm very happy to be talking to you.
As we were warming up earlier, trying to get our natural rapport back, it's kind of cool because you and I sit in a weekly editorial meeting and I get to kind of get a glimpse into the inner workings of your editorial brain and mind and creative process every week. It's always fun to listen to, especially to listen to you and Sonia Simone, who's also been on the show, rap about writing and ideas for pieces for Copyblogger. So catch us up a little bit, maybe for listeners who aren't kind of familiar with your background as a writer. I mean, you've been doing the editing and writing thing for years and years, over a decade, I think, right?
Yeah.
Give us the story about how you came to be the editor-in-chief for Copyblogger and, you know, all the things you do now. Obviously you manage, you know, writers and you edit, you write a prolific amount of pieces for them. And full disclosure, obviously we do work together.
We do.
Yeah. I don't sit in on editorial meetings just out of sheer curiosity. I haven't been invited
you
to
hack into them.
Yeah, just be a fly on the wall. Like, who is that guy always listening to our Skype meetings?
You are invited, and we're very happy to have you there.
Yeah, but tell us how you came to be the editor-in-chief for this very large audience, I mean, I think last I checked, I mean, it's just hundreds of thousands of readers, you know, and email subscribers. So maybe just catch us up a little bit on how you got here from, you know, maybe the early days of your professional editing career and your kind of solopreneur career over at your writing and editing business.
Yeah, it sounds surreal to me even saying that now, even though it's been a while. It'll be 4 years this year in 2018 when I started working for Copyblogger. And I like that I'm still like, wow, that is kind of amazing, because there was a time where that was really like what I wanted to do. And so it's very my writer editor story is very the short version. And I'll go into more details is that it's very one thing leading to another. Oh, but what I was saying about that I worked for the company for 4 years now, it's even though it's become, you know, like day-to-day work, I like taking a step back all the time I don't want to take it for granted because I have that memory still. It's still very fresh, even after all these years, that it was something that I really wanted to do. It was a company I really wanted to be involved with when I was working for myself. And so, okay, we can take it back to the beginning. Again, I will try to not, I don't tell short stories very well, but I'll try not to. I'm always like long story long because I can never make it short. I'm an only child. And so I'm in my head a lot for my whole life. That's kind of where I've lived. So I've always really liked writing and journaling, and I never really thought of it professionally. And I was even actually thinking that I was probably really in the moment as a child and as a teenager, because I didn't really think about what I wanted to do professionally. I never really was looking that forward. And because I was never like, I want to be a writer, I want to be an editor. I think I was just really in the moment, and I was always very passionate about things that I did. And so writing was, I guess you would call it a hobby. I would always journal and do extra writing things that, you know, came to my mind. Always lots of spiral notebooks. At the time, it was spiral notebooks. Now I have lots of Moleskines all over my desk, which is my favorite notebook. So when I was in high school, and I was reminded of this because our coworker, Lauren Thompson, she wrote a post about when she started taking journalism classes in college, that she encountered her first sort of old school journalist teacher who really taught her about ruthless editing. And I had that experience in high school that I was reminded of from reading Lauren's article that I completely took for granted, and I still take it for granted now, except that I'm at a point where I'm really reflecting and appreciating it. So I took journalism classes all 4 years of high school, and we had a newspaper yearbook, and we had broadcast journalism, which was kind of unique. Mm-hmm. Again, took it for granted that we have our own television station that we, you know, so I had some on-air experience in high school, completely took it for granted. Like, oh, okay, doesn't everyone do this in high school?
Wait, this is in Los Angeles or?
In Los Angeles. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, well, that makes sense. They teach journalism in kindergarten in Los Angeles.
Right, exactly. I probably had some exposure even before high school, now that I'm thinking about it. So it's all like things that I completely took for granted. And even now, things that are second nature to me, I'm like, wow, I learned that 20 years ago. It's not like it was always second nature. I just learned it a long time ago, and it feels like it's natural. You know, grammar rules that I know, or headline rules that I know, AP style rules that I know. Mm-hmm. I take a step back. I'm like, oh, I know that because it's just, I've just been doing it for a long time. But even though I was taking all those journalism classes in high school, I had no drive like I'm going to be a journalist or I'm going to be a writer. I was just doing it because that's what I liked. And I had a really great instructor who I learned passed away last year. But he was just what you would picture, old school journalist, always with the coffee in hand. I just remember so much coffee, and I don't think I drank coffee in high school. So then in college, I majored in philosophy because wasn't a huge fan of our English department. I started taking some English classes, just again, that natural progression of doing all the journalism in high school. I wasn't a super fan of the literature and the professors, but I really liked the philosophy department when I started taking those classes. I started off double majoring in philosophy and anthropology, and then I dropped anthropology to a minor, and I did honors in philosophy. And so then when it came time to get a job, all of my experience, for the most part, was editing things. I did a lot of tutoring, and at the college that I went to a small liberal arts college, and we had like a peer tutoring thing that I did for work, where basically at night students could drop in the library, and there was a section where you could just wait and get your writing reviewed. And I got a job doing that. I don't remember how I qualified. Someone recommended me. And then, so I did that, and I did tutoring stuff. So I started working as an editor right after college. It was just like when I had to put together a resume, like I graduated from college resume, so much stuff added up that I could qualify to be an editor. So my first job out of college, I worked at PR Newswire, editing press releases. Then I worked at Media Bistro after I worked at PR Newswire. And then after Media Bistro is when I started my own, I started doing freelance work. And a coworker at Media Bistro, when she found out that I was going to be a freelance editor, because I still wasn't embracing writing yet. I was just like, I'm just going to do editing. I'm going to specialize in editing. She told me, there's this website. This was like in 2008, 10 years ago. She said, there's this website called Copyblogger. And if you're going to be working for yourself, I think you might benefit from reading it, you know, just as a suggestion.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely how I found out about Copyblogger. It was through, and this was a coworker that I didn't even really know. She worked in New York. I worked in Los Angeles. So it wasn't someone who I interacted with daily at all. She just randomly passed along this information to me. So I started reading Copyblogger, and Brian, at first I read everything Brian. I really connected to his writing style. And
this is Brian Clark, the founder.
Brian Clark,
Copyblogger.
The founder of Copyblogger. Instant connection with his writing, and I knew stuff about marketing, but to me, it just took everything that I knew to a different level and really made me reflect on a lot of things, rather than like, oh, yeah, that sounds right. So I really liked how much Copyblogger made me think. And the cool thing about, which this is a fun time to mention it, is I knew you through your writing, Kelton, before we ever talked. Like, I knew who you were because I read Copyblogger, and, you know, anytime there was a new writer that I'd see, like, their author name, you know, I would wanted to get familiar with any of them because it was such a, so I knew who you were through your writing. That is the power of writing.
That's crazy.
And yeah, the Writer Files series on Copyblogger. I just, that's how I met Robert, which is, that's really the, to answer your question is, Robert is why I'm here. I owe Robert everything, which he would say no, which he has because he's so nice.
Right, and right.
He's like, you did the work. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but.
That's cool. And that, and Robert Bruce, who is Robert now Bruce. VP of marketing for Rainmaker Digital Services, who we've worked with for years. Great guy. He's been, he's done a couple episodes of writer porn here on the podcast as well. And he's a lot of fun to, he's always fun to rap with, isn't he?
He's so fun. Yeah.
We can geek out about writing for hours. Like a standard, like check-in call would often turn into discussions of, you know, ridiculous literary references where you're just like, what are we even talking about?
Or how do we get
the end of the call
on the subject? Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah. So much fun. That was really lucky that Robert and I started talking on Twitter, because I knew who Robert was because of Copyblogger, and I didn't try to pitch myself or anything. I wanted to get involved with Copyblogger so much, but I just couldn't do, I don't know. It just, you got to wait for the right time. It's like, you know, when there's, I think a big skill is knowing when to wait and knowing when to take action. Mm. Cause I think there's a time for each, and, it just didn't feel right because it would have been the same thing if we ended up talking about, I had so much respect for your work and his work that I didn't want to just explode with like, well, I love copy bloggers. So we just started talking. on Twitter a little bit, like nothing huge at all. And then I think about 6 months after that, with very little contact, he messaged me and asked if I wanted to write a guest post for Copyblogger. I think he was running the blog at that time, and I think he was looking for new authors, and he happened, or something about editing, and he happened to remember that we talked, and then he looked at my site, and he liked my stuff on my site, and so
this is Revision Fairy.
Revisionfairy.com, yeah. Which is still kind of there.
I see it. There's your face.
It has my face. My face is all over there. It's all over that site, which was a tough thing for a while. My first version of that site, I was like, I don't need a photo. This is back in 2008. I'm like, I don't think I want that. I don't think I want to talk about myself at all. Sure. And then nobody knows anything about you, and they don't want to hire you because you look like you're maybe not real. So that had to change. And it did. And Copyblogger helped me with that. So from guest posting to Copyblogger, to timing and stars aligning, where I was looking to not work for myself anymore after 6 years. And I was just reached a turning point of, I felt like I plateaued of what I could do on my own and by myself. And it took a toll just being really alone. I didn't work with anyone. It was all just me and my work for that time. And so I was looking for being part of a team, and at the same time where Copyblogger's growth, where they were looking to bring someone in who was an editor. So 4 years ago, almost 4 years ago, that aligned. It was timing, but it was a result of Copyblogger going, and as a result of me growing, and it worked out. So a lot of great things happen when you make yourself vulnerable, because I had mentioned to Robert 8 months before I started working for the company, when I was guest posting, that I was looking for a change. And that made me really uncomfortable, that I was admitting that, what I was doing, wasn't working out for me anymore, and that I wanted to do something different, because I was so used to having that as my identity. So, but I also thought, oh, I have to put it out there. I have to let Robert know. Otherwise, how is anyone going to know that I'm looking?
Right.
Now,
that's an uncomfortable feeling, kind of putting yourself out there.
It was very, very comfortable. I just felt exposed from it. But Robert, because again, praising Robert, so great. He remembered 8 months later, when on the editorial call, they were having that conversation that, should we bring someone on? Who would it be? And then Jared reached out to me. It was a very happy email, kind of out of the blue, because 8 months after I mentioned it to Robert, it wasn't in the forefront of my mind. I was still doing Revision Fairy work. It was actually a really great 8 months. I was having a really great 8 months of work. And so it was kind of not in my mind anymore. I didn't think it would ever happen. And then I got an email from Jared.
Interesting.
Asking what my availability was and if I was interested, and it worked out.
That's cool.
We all got along.
yeah. Well, I'll link to the Revision Fairy, because you can take a look at Steph's setup over there. It's a cool site, but she's not taking any business presently.
It says
you can't that steal stuff from Copyblogger. Sorry. And, of course, you've written something like 100 pieces for Copyblogger now, it seems like. When I look at your author page, it just stretches into infinity, seemingly. It's very cool. I mean, the stuff you write about, obviously, we kind of have some crossover in what we write about. you write a lot about creativity and just some of your more recent posts, like 7 Unusual Signs on the Path to a Breakthrough. No is my favorite word. One of my favorite words also. Great post. The Power of Believing You're an Artist. I'll link to the author page, obviously. And so you've done a lot of work now, editing and writing, and you kind of marry it all together. So you're like a triple threat in the business. Is that how you would consider
yourself?
I like
yourself? That. I like being called a triple threat.
Writing, editing, managing, cracking the whip over there, getting those writers into shape. I might happen to be one. No, you're a great editor and
no,
very kind.
And you're a great writer.
Oh, stop.
That I manage too.
Stop it. No, I'll take all the praise you want to heap on me. But in all seriousness, yeah, and I've actually helped you to produce a podcast, mm-hmm. a great show that we did on Rainmaker FM called Editor in Chief. You can find those actually in the archives. They still live on Rainmaker FM. So I'll link to that if anyone wants to take a look at Stephanie's archives of advice over there. The Art of Writing, updated for marketing in the digital age. And it was a great show. You had a great run. And there are many, many episodes on professional editorial standards that help distinguish you from your competition. Definitely missed that.
Mm-hmm. That was
nuggets.
Fun. I think they're over 50 episodes, maybe around 50 episodes.
Yeah,
of that.
They're kind of evergreen, right? I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot of great advice
even,
there.
I think a lot of stuff would be relevant now. That was a great opportunity. I like that show a lot.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, so what are you working on presently? Or was there anywhere else you wanted to point listeners to your stuff out there?
I think you got it. My author page is great. It will, because it starts on Copyblogger, because it starts at the most recent, yeah. And then you can go back. And on Revision Fairy, I publish once a month on Revision Fairy. A creative writing prompt, just a random little thing. And then I ask questions related to the prompt, and it's supposed to get the juices flowing.
Cool.
So it's not overwhelming if you subscribe over there. You really just get one creative writing prompt a month. So that is the extent. But I do have other writing and ebooks that I've done over on Revision Fairy. So yeah, those two places are, if you want to check out more of my stuff, those are good. Yeah, you got it.
Let's talk about kind of how you put all the pieces together daily, on a daily, weekly basis. Let's talk about your productivity. And because you're doing all these things, you are a triple threat. You probably have some systems in place that are helping you get it all done, because I can't imagine how you wouldn't be an incredibly fastidious or somewhat organized person. But let's talk about productivity. How much time are you kind of researching or reading or studying the competition or?
Yeah, that I was thinking about that, and I have trouble reading or watching anything and it not being work, because I'm always thinking of connecting the dots, like even commercials or ads. So in my downtime, I pretty much have to do nothing if I want my brain to relax. Because so I feel like I try to keep work hours, and I'm pretty good at that. But I feel like most of, because I do like, you know, watching or reading things in my spare time, I feel like the whole day is a lot of research. I put more emphasis on research than reading, because reading is actually not one of my favorite things to do outside of work. I don't read for pleasure, really, which people always find surprising. But I do read a lot during the day. And I think I even read after work, but it's kind of work-related things. I'm just, you know, not official work time. Mm-hmm. But to me, everything is research.
Interesting.
So I would say I spend the whole day, you know, whatever I'm doing, you're reading your posts when you submit them to me is research, because then I get ideas for things that I want to riff off of, things that I really like. So yeah, research more than reading, but I do read a lot because I'm reading for work, and everything that I look at for work takes me on tangents of research for things, which leads to, like you mentioned, competition.
Yeah.
So things that we link to of relevant articles, stuff like that is research, because then it takes me to other sites that are talking about similar things that we talk about. And
yeah,
it's all very connected. It's sort of like organized chaos, which probably a lot of people say with, who work in creative professions.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you write practically every week for the blog, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you were having to turn around and edit other writers' work. So then are you blocking a chunk for your own writing? Are you blocking a chunk for the editing? Mm-hmm. Are they bleeding together? How are you staying on task?
I do separate my work out, and they do bleed together, but there's no consequence of that really if I do it correctly. I also have a funny thing where when I have a lot of other non-writing work to do, all I want to do is write. And then when I've cleared out my whole schedule, because I finished everything else I want to do and only have time to write, I'm like twiddling my thumbs. Like, I don't feel like writing right now. Like whatever I have to be doing, I don't want to be doing that. I want to be doing the other thing.
Interesting.
So that does speak to the blocking, because one thing that I like doing is, so Monday through Friday work time, I pretty much write every day for even if it's like 20 minutes or under. Mm-hmm. There's some writing going on. But like you said, yeah, I'm kind of juggling a lot of other things. So my kind of routine, I would say, is I like attending to my other responsibilities, whether, it's managing, responding to emails, editing, images. I say I do the art direction for the images on Copyblogger.
Mm-hmm.
And Claire, our wonderful Claire Garrett.
Hi, Claire.
Together for me. Hi, Claire.
She's not listening to this.
Claire's never going to hear this. Claire does wonderful work. So I work with her on our images. And so I like getting that work out of the way before I sit down to write, I would say, in the second part of the day. That being said, part of my process and sort of the routine that I've just had to get, that I've gotten comfortable with, and I still kind of getting comfortable with it, because I always, it's different every time. That's the thing about writing, for me at least, is it comes out differently and depending, like on the week, depending on what I'm working on. So I usually can't relax during a week until I have an outline or a draft of what I'm doing. At that point, I sort of, I'm a little more at ease, because until the outline or the draft comes out, it's just like, I don't know how this is going to happen. Even though, like you said, I've had about 100 articles on Copyblogger, and I did plenty of writing before that. Every week I'm still like, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but you learn to trust. So I'm not completely on edge. But so when that draft comes out, I don't have a lot of control over. So sometimes it's first thing in the morning, I have other things I need to do, but I have to spend maybe up to 2 hours working on the draft if it's coming out of me. Other times it will be, be in the afternoon, or even I think it was last week, I was doing laundry at night and I had to change my stuff from the washer and put it in the dryer. I was like, I just need to write down one thing. And again, I try not to work after like late hours, because I think the decompressing time is really important. But I was like, I have to write this down. Like, this is work. I can't not do this. And I was like 45 minutes late putting my stuff into the dryer. Like my wet clothes were just sitting there. But I had to do it. There was no, I didn't have a choice. It was work that I had to do. I couldn't stop my brain or stop the ideas. Cause then I would just kick myself the next day when I'd be sitting there twiddling my thumbs going, well, what did I want to say? So I have a little control over when the outline or the draft, that really helps me narrow down what the point of what I'm writing is, mm-hmm. when that happens. But then after that point, I feel relief, and my actual more fine-tuning, getting a full draft that would make sense to someone session, and then ultimately more revisions and more editing and more proofreading. Those sessions usually come to me. I can schedule them for later in the day because at that point, it's exactly what I said before. I want to get my other responsibilities out of the way, and then I can focus on writing the second half of the day.
Hmm. Interesting. So it sounds like the wheels are just kind of always churning. Mm-hmm. The ideas are just kind of incubating in the background. And then once they're kind of fully formed, it's cool because you just kind of always have your finger on the pulse, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it must be interesting how it all finally comes out, and you've got just all these different great, not only resources in your pieces, but there is that philosophy piece, don't you think?
Yeah.
Just kind of like the you know, you do some of these think pieces that are, you know, definitely like they're philosophical. I get it now. Like, I think.
You get because I study philosophy.
And it's all coming together.
That's where it came from. Yeah, I had no idea. I was, there was a point in college, I started thinking more about what I wanted to do professionally. Because like I was saying, when I was a kid, I didn't really have an idea. I wanted to go to the grad school for philosophy and be a philosophy professor. And I feel like, oh, I kind of get to do that now. I didn't realize that was going to be able to be part of my job. Not that I'm a philosophy professor now, but I use it, you know, it's like kind of a joke degree, philosophy degree from a liberal arts school. But you know, I'll make fun of myself with that, but I use it.
There is something about philosophy, though, wouldn't you say, that trains your thinking process, or your, at least your ability to tackle the bigger thought pieces, you know, because you're having to be kind of very deliberate about the way you're thinking about things. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. And it, to me, it ties into editing too, because what I liked about philosophy in school was arguing for a point.
Right.
And then there really wasn't a whole lot of right or wrong. It just was how well you could argue for the point you want to make. And to do that, you have to be a good editor. So then the stuff that I did in high school and the editing that I learned there kind of came into play too, because I did well in philosophy in college because I could write very precise arguments about things. And a lot of that has to do with editing, my editing skill. I wasn't just mindlessly ranting and saying it's philosophy, you know, because that's kind of, you know, like the navel gazing, like what's the point of this? Everything that I did sort of came together as, oh, I can do really focused things. So that benefits me for Copyblogger too, because again, being a good fit for the company is I tightly edit my own work as well. So having that skill set has been really helpful. So when I am doing philosophical things, it's not just Sonia and I use the term unicorn vomit for right. things that just sort of ramble and have no point, and you're trying to be too cutesy. I get a little cutesy in my writing, but and I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but of course, because it's my own writing, I think it's okay. But there's a point. Sonia and I, sure. you know, joke, like, the point is good. It is good to have a point. Yeah. So I can have that sort of questioning element in my work. I like questioning things. I like looking at things from different perspectives without it being too self-indulgent or too, again, what's the point? Because I think it can go in that direction.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think the analytical and the critical pieces of philosophy, and then, you know, the rhetoric stuff, you know, kind of that arguing, you know, definitely all plays into successfully not only conveying a point online, but connecting with your audience. Because like you say, we're not navel gazing at Copyblogger, you know, we have a goal.
Right. <yeah. laughs>
You know, and a lot of it is teaching, but you are literally teaching online content creators to be more effective at connecting with their audience. Content marketing, you know, that's really half of the battle there. Mm-hmm. So you can't be, like you said, you can't just be amorphous in your content.
Yeah. And you know, I was even thinking, it kind of goes back to what I said about Brian Clark's writing earlier, that the philosophical elements work for copyblogger, or it's what I'm about, because lots of people were talking about the same things that Brian was talking about. Actually, not a lot. I don't think in 2008 there were a lot, but other people were. There were other marketing, copywriting blogs out there. But Brian just really made me think. And that's why I wanted to hear what he had to say on topics and not other people. And I read other blogs and I learned actually a lot about other ones that I liked through Copyblogger, through guest posters and things like that. But Brian's work, it's not like, what I really like about content marketing is you don't have to reinvent the wheel, but if you make your audience think and give them a different way to look at things, and present, really it's about the presentation, you know, having a presentation that connects, that shows that you know what you're talking about, that you understand your audience member struggles. And so I think philosophy works with that, because it is an element that helps you connect with the people that you want to reach. Because it's not that it's so hard to connect with people, it's just people don't, if people don't know you, how could they connect? It actually goes back to where I was saying, where I didn't think I needed a photo on my website in 2008. And I didn't think that I needed to write about myself at all. But if people don't know your point of view, why would they connect? You know, they can't connect with it, and they probably won't even pay attention to it. So there's all this balance stuff with content marketing. But we have, if you can be philosophical but have the goals, like you said, that is kind of like striking that balance that I think helps with audience building.
For sure. Well, it sets you apart as a writer, because, you know, there is a lot of bad writing out there, and there's a lot of great writing that never gets seen too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's, it's kind of interesting to get a glimpse into your thought processes in your brain. Thanks so much for joining us for this half of a tour of the writer's process. If you enjoy the Writer Files, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts to help other writers find us. And for more episodes or just to leave a comment or a question, you can always drop by writerfiles.fm and chat with me on Twitter @KeltonReed. Cheers. Talk to you next week.